It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, Republicans in the state legislature have a middle way on the budget plan. And drug-related deaths in our state are on the rise. Those stories in your main newscast just ahead, but first this national and world news from NPR. This is Main Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Fairpoint Communications is eliminating more than 200 jobs across northern New England. That's about 10% of the region's workforce. The company says the cuts are necessary to remain competitive, but union leaders say the measures will further erode service quality. Tom Porter has details.
Fairpoint says a total of 260 jobs are being cut in 17 states, with most of those losses affecting northern New England. Labor union officials say nearly 220 positions are being eliminated in Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire, including about 60 jobs in South Burlington, Vermont, where a call center is being closed.
For this company to come in, Fairpoint, and destroy this business is just unspeakable, because that's exactly what they're doing.
Don Tremontosi is president of Communications Workers of America Local 1400, which represents about 150 workers in Maine. He says news of the cuts came as a surprise Friday morning.
Yeah, we was thrown for a loop this morning. I mean, it was an announcement that we did not get a heads up on, and you know, phone's been ringing off the hook, and we have no answers from the company yet on exactly how this is going to play out.
Customer service here in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont is certainly going to significantly suffer with these layoffs.
Peter McLaughlin is with the Maine chapter of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, where he's business manager at Local 2327, representing nearly 700 Fairpoint employees. He points out that Fairpoint, which provides landline telephone digital communications services, is under investigation by regulators for its inability to meet service standards.
And getting rid of all these people isn't going to help that.
McLaughlin also describes the layoffs as a slap in the face, coming less than 3 months after the end of a 131-day strike by Fairpoint employees. A Fairpoint spokesperson declined to go on tape, but in a statement, company chief executive Paul H. Sunu says that while difficult, the restructuring helps solidify the company's future. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
A bipartisan group of lawmakers wants to give terminally ill Mainers the freedom to hasten their deaths. The proposed bill drew strong testimony at a public hearing before the Health and Human Services Committee today. As Patty White reports, some see the choice to die as a fundamental right, while others see the proposal as an attempt to legitimize suicide.
Three other states have death with dignity laws: Oregon, Washington, and Vermont. The Maine proposal is modeled after Vermont's, which passed in 2013. The sponsor, Republican Senator Roger Cates, says a competent adult should have control over his or her own life, generally free from government interference.
We already honor that principle in many and varied ways. People have the right to make medical decisions for themselves and almost always have the right to refuse treatment, even if others might think that treatment is a good idea.
Cates says the freedom to make those decisions should extend to the end of life. And his bill, he says, offers safeguards to ensure it can only be used in cases where the person has a limited life expectancy and is capable of making such a decision. It requires that a patient request the self-administered medication on three separate occasions, the last one being a written request signed in the presence of two adults who are, quote, not interested persons. Cates says it's also important to note
that no doctor has any duty or responsibility to participate in this if he or she doesn't want to.
Cates has the support of at least three other lawmakers who planned to sponsor similar bills, one Republican and two Democrats, including Representative Roberta Beavers.
Please keep in mind this bill is not a mandate. It merely offers a choice.
A choice that was the right one for Ethan Remmel, according to his father, Charles, who testified before the Health and Human Services Committee. Remmel says his son was living in Washington, a right-to-die state, when he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Remmel says he'll cherish the memories of his son's last days that were spent on his own terms, rather than bedridden and suffering. Remmel read from a blog post that his son wrote,
in which he first noted that suicide in this situation is the wrong application of terms. He's going to die anyway. It's not about a choice between living and dying. It's about how you're going to die.
But that's not how everyone sees it.
LD 1270 is yet another attempt to make suicide legitimate, acceptable, ethical, and morally right. giving it the appearance of respectability and acceptability by recruiting physicians through the force of law.
Tim Russell of Sydney says the Declaration of Independence grants citizens the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, not the pursuit of death. Other opponents say they fear that the law would impact certain populations more than others. Dennis Fitzgibbons is executive director of Alpha One, an organization that supports people with disabilities.
When we disabled people see legalizing assisted suicide, what we see in it is that some people get suicide prevention, while others get suicide assistance based on value judgments and prejudice.
An attorney with Maine Legal Services for the Elderly, Leo Delicata, spoke neither for nor against the bill, but did question how many people would actually use the law if passed.
Most people are afraid to die. I don't know too many people that aren't. And to prolong life is the choice that most people want to make.
The issue has divided hospice nurses, with supporters saying hospice isn't always successful in maintaining quality of life. Those opposed say the focus should instead be on providing better end-of-life care. Another bill under consideration, which was unopposed in its hearing, seeks to improve and expand palliative care in the state. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
You're listening to Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. Still to come, Maine's count of drug-related deaths rises. But first, for the last 5 months, it has not been clear whether Republicans in the state legislature would come together around the sweeping tax reform elements of Governor Paul LePage's budget proposal, or whether they'd try to blaze their own path. That question was answered today. A.J. Higgins reports.
As the GOP budget plan was unveiled at the State House, Maine Senate President Mike Thibodeau told reporters that the Republican legislative tax proposal brings to the table a number of welcome changes, including a big break for taxpayers.
It offers $380 million worth of income tax relief.
The Republican plan proposes a realignment of individual income tax brackets. For those making $50,000, the tax rate would be 6.5%. That's down from the current rate of 7.95%, but not as low as the governor's proposed 5.75%. The plan also retains municipal revenue sharing funds that LePage wants to eliminate and keeps the popular homestead property tax exemption program instead for everyone, and not just for homeowners over the age of 65, as the governor has proposed. Most importantly, House Republican leader Ken Fredette says the GOP plan rejects LePage's recommended expansion of the sales tax and would also keep the sales tax rate at 5.5%.
Obviously, that was due to sunset, and I think keeping it where it's at and sort of as a trade-off for income tax reduction is I think the governor has started that conversation, and I think it's appropriate at this point in time because, you know, we want hardworking Mainers to be able to keep more money in their pocket.
And while the plan raises the meals and lodging tax to 9% over the current 8%, the GOP proposal also retains elements of LePage's original measure, such as conforming the estate tax to the federal exemption rate and exempts military pensions from the state income tax. Senate President Thibodeau says there's still a lot for the governor to like in the GOP proposal.
I think that the governor, when he reads the plan, will be excited about what he sees. You know, I mean, he's looking for income tax relief, and this is exactly what this offers.
At first glance, some concerns that we have around the proposal is we don't know how it's paid for.
Democratic House Speaker Mark Eve says his party wants to see more about exactly how the Republicans plan to pay for their $380 million in tax cuts. He's also concerned about the realignments of the tax brackets, which he says hints of trickle-down economics that provide the greatest amount of relief to the wealthiest taxpayers. But there are also elements of the GOP plan that Eve says Democrats can support.
I do think that there is a path forward with both sides. We were hoping that the Republicans would come out with a proposal so that we could, in good faith, negotiate. The governor came out with his proposal. We came out with our Better Deal for Maine in April. And now the Republicans in the legislature have their own plan. And I think that is a good indication that we're going to sit down and try to hammer something out.
The Appropriations Committee reviewed elements of the measure late this afternoon, and leaders say they hope to have a budget out of the committee by Memorial Day. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Drug deaths in Maine are on the rise. That's according to preliminary numbers from the Maine Attorney General's office, which found 40 more Mainers died as a result of drug use last year than in 2013. Mal Leary has details.
Maine is reporting 208 drug deaths for last year, up from 176 the year before. But it's not just the overall number that's causing concern. It is the drugs that are being used. Marcella Sorg is a medical and forensic anthropologist with the University of Maine, who's been analyzing drug death data in the state for nearly 20 years. She says while deaths from opioids are still a major problem, there have been significant increases in deaths linked to fentanyl as well as heroin and morphine alone or in combination with other drugs.
It is no longer pharmaceutical opiates that's causing this increase. It's heroin and fentanyl. And the fentanyl, even though that's a pharmaceutical product name, is not pharmaceutical fentanyl.
Sorg says this drug is being illegally made and distributed as a white powder on the streets. In 2013, there were 9 fentanyl deaths, and that jumped to 43 last year. The deaths from heroin and morphine alone or in combination with other drugs also had a significant increase from 34 in 2013 to 57 last year. And it's not just a problem in the cities.
The problems are in every county. They are generally distributed in terms of population density and access to I-95.
Sorg cautions the numbers could go up as autopsy reports and death certificates are reviewed. Attorney General Janet Mills says she's very concerned that the potency of the drugs is going up and some of the drug overdoses may be accidental.
This fentanyl substance, which is often used to cut heroin, is 30 to 50 times more potent than heroin. So people are using it perhaps unknowingly as a substitute for heroin or with heroin, and they are killing themselves.
Mills says another indicator of the growing drug problem is the rise in treatment admissions for heroin. The response to the drug problem, she says, must come in the form of prevention education, law enforcement pressure on drug dealers and supply lines, and improved treatment for those Mainers who become addicted. She hopes the legislature approves several bills pending this session that would address all three areas. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
And finally tonight, we bring you a clarification on our story from earlier this week on Maine's top high schools. As it turns out, there were some minor discrepancies in some of the data that was used by U.S. News & World Report to compile the annual rankings. Jay Field explains.
In its list, U.S. News used enrollment data from the 2012-2013 school year from the National Center for Education Statistics. As it turns out, though, the state enrollment numbers that year for some of Maine's top 17 high schools were actually higher than the figures cited in the U.S. News study. The gap was especially wide at Brewer High, which had never made the list before and shot all the way to number 5. U.S. News said their enrollment was 384 students. The state had it at 735. The superintendent in Brewer was out of the office today, but in an interview with MPBN earlier this week, Jay McIntyre said the high school has seen legitimate improvement, due in part to students arriving in ninth grade better prepared than in the past. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
Let's check in on the weather now. Tonight, clouds with lows in the mid to high 40s. Tomorrow, we'll see clouds and mist with showers in all but the north and temperatures in the low to mid-60s. Cooler temperatures along the coast, and on Sunday, morning showers in the north, otherwise becoming partly sunny after a cloudy morning. Temperatures in the mid-60s to mid-70s with cooler temperatures along the coast. And that's Maine Things Considered for today. Thanks to Ed Morin, Andrew Catalina, and Keith Shortall. I'm Nora Flaherty.